Welcome back here with Dave and Faisal on QR Calgary and More Than Money. We're joined by Jamie Golombek, who's the Managing Director of Tax and Estate Planning at CIBC. He stuck around for a second segment because he did a great job of teasing this particular segment, right? Although we're going to be filing our 2023 taxes over the coming months, the real tax planning for 2024 begins now.
And I think that's very Canadian of us. We always do things at the last minute. So when it comes time for tax filing, people think that's the tax planning time. It's too late.
Right.
We're looking in the rearview mirror now. And so right now, we're at the beginning of the year. What do we do going forward? Let's break it down into areas that are sizable bites for people to look at. Let's start off with investors, what they can do. We talked about the 3D process, deduct, divide, defer. What are ways that we can do from an investor perspective as you transition to retirement or living in retirement, that perspective, and then some estate planning or tax strategy planning for estates as a sort of three part.
Sure.
So Jamie, let's kick it right off. Let's go to investors, strategy planning for 2024 from an investor perspective. What should we be preparing or planning for?
The first thing to do is really, of course, sit down with your portfolio, with your advisors, and look at your portfolio. Are you being tax effective? You know, what are the types of income that you're earning? Are you earning fully taxable? Yeah, interest rates are high relatively, so you might be excited about that 5% GIC. But remember, that's fully taxable income. Talk about your full marginal rate, right? With Alberta, I think 48% is a top rate. Could you be doing something more tax efficient? Could you be earning capital gains from equities, from mutual funds that are only 50% taxable? That brings your top rate down to 24%. Could you be earning Canadian dividends from public companies, from mutual funds, things like that, and invest in Canadian public companies like banks and pipelines and things like that, that generate the dividend tax credit? So we can be pretty efficient. You can even look even more sophisticated with something called return of capital, where you get cash flow that's not currently taxable that ultimately reduces your cost base and gives you hopefully a later gain, bigger gain when you sell. So number one, I would focus on tax efficiency. Number two, I would look at, you know, obviously making sure you're maximizing all of your registered plans. So topping up that RSP, not just for last year, you have till February 29th to make a deductible contribution for 2023, but now we have 2024, right? We can actually make this year's contribution ahead of the game. In other words, once we know what last year's earned income is, we take 18% of last year's earned income, less any pension adjustment if you have a pension plan at work, and then that is the amount we can put in now for 2024. We've talked about tax-free savings accounts, another $7,000 this year. If you've got kids, we've talked about RESPs, Registered Education Savings Plans, putting in, you know, enough every year to get the government grant, maybe going even beyond that. If there's someone in the family with a disability, registered disability savings plans for, you know, tax-free shelter, growth and things like that, grants and bonds. And then, of course, you know, the first home savings account that we've already discussed. So lots of opportunities for tax sheltering. And those are the things I would really focus on. And then finally, you know, if you're going to be charitable, 2024, set up a charitable budget for 2024. And then be strategic about that and say, look, if I'm going to give X amount to charity in 2024, can I be tax efficient? Maybe I want to donate some appreciated securities at the beginning of the year. Maybe I put that into something called a donor advised fund, where I can actually get my receipt right away, pay no capital gains tax on the increase in value of those stocks or mutual funds. And then once it's in the donor advised fund, I can then allocate it this year, next year, for the rest of my lifetime, or even my kids' lifetime, to any of the 87,000 registered charities in Canada. The only minimal obligation is distribute 5% a year. So lots of information, but again, speak to your advisor, because there's so many things that we can be doing throughout the entire year to reduce tax, especially on investment income.
Jamie, when you're sticking to the investment income, there are many business owners who have money in their corporation, either their operating company or their holding corporation. Let's make it simple and say they've got money in a holding corporation. It's not getting mixed up with the business itself. They've done some good planning there. Now comes the time for investing. We've got high interest rates. We still got eligible dividends. We got capital gains. You mentioned that about in a non-registered portfolio. Business owners tend to look at things a little bit different when it comes to how they invest in their holding company. Generally speaking, how should they look at the type of investment income they're receiving? Because there might be a disadvantage in one area versus another from a type of income you receive when it comes to investing within your corporation.
Now, I'm glad you brought that up. This is a very serious misunderstanding and very least understood area of tax. And that's because corporate tax rates are very different than personal tax rates. Corporate tax rates are a flat rate, and it depends on the type of income. If you have operating income, that's one thing. But once you have investment income, you're looking at very high tax rates inside the corporation. And in fact, on the fully integrated basis, your tax rates could even be higher than you're paying personally. So I think it's very important to look at the different types of investment income inside your holding company. You know, stay away from things like, you know, fully taxable interest income. You know, I would say a special word of warning, people aren't really aware of this, but when it comes to things like foreign income, I'm thinking now of US dividends. Speak to your tax advisor, because US dividends are very negatively treated because of the 15% withholding tax and refundable tax system when they're earned corporately. And you could actually end up paying up well over 50% tax on a fully integrated basis, even though the top Alberta rate is only 48%. So you got to be very, very careful about the types of income earned there. And one of the great things that, depending on your personal tolerance, is life insurance. A lot of our clients now that are, you know, using holdcos are looking to buy some permanent whole life insurance owned by the corporation. Because the beauty of the whole life policy, of course, at the end of the day, is that the money gets invested on a tax-deferred basis. And on death, a tax-free death benefit gets paid to the corporation's capital dividend account and ultimately paid out on death as a tax-free capital dividend. So I'm not saying put all the money in the holdco into life insurance, but, you know, 10%, 15%, you know, wherever you think right, it could be the right number. And we look at it as an asset diversification, but also as a pure alternative asset class to fixed income, which is punitively taxed inside of a corporation.
One of the biggest debates that we get, Jamie, is on drawing down from your RSPs or RIFs just to avoid or minimize the tax upon death. We had this conversation all the time with people calling us up saying, should I take more money out now? Or because I know that I'm going to be at the highest tax bracket when I pass away, and all my money, my RSPs, my RIF will be fully taxable at that point in time. So my tax rate's lower now than potentially when I pass sometime in the future. When it comes down to drawing money out from a tax perspective, what are your thoughts? What should people consider?
Well, my general advice is never take out more than you need, or more than you have to, at least from a RIF, and more you need from RSP or RIF, in almost every scenario. And it really depends on how long you plan to live, right? So someone who is 71 could very well live statistically, if they're in good health, another 17, 18 years, right? So is it worth prepaying tax now at age 71 at a lower rate versus a higher rate on death in 17 years' time? Because you're going to lose the tax-deferred compounding on the tax that you're saying to the government at age 71. So our math says in almost every scenario, it does not make sense. Now, if you're going to die sooner because you've got life health concerns, you may not live much longer. You've got limited number of years until, or you're older, for example, and you are in a relatively low bracket right now, then yeah, maybe it makes sense to take out. I would generally say we wouldn't look at a strategy like this. I would say unless your income from all sources is under, let's call it $50,000 a year. At $50,000 a year, you're in the lowest tax bracket. You know, maybe it makes sense to do some excess withdrawals from the RSP or RIF to bring your income right up to that $50,000, right? But again, there are other considerations, right? Loss of government benefits, income-tested benefits, the age credit, which is clawed back based on income, you know, quarterly HST, GST credits, things like that. You got to be careful, right? So when you're creating excess income beyond what you have, you may lose other benefits, which means your marginal effective tax rate could actually be higher than you think. So my general rule of thumb is never take money out of your RSP or RIF early, because you'll end up paying more tax at the end of the day because you've lost the next 10 or 20 years of tax-deferred compounding. That being said, if you have no other money in the world, one strategy obviously would be to take the money out and just put it into a TFSA. Because that allows you to get that same tax-free growth in the TFSA, take advantage of an easy, low tax rate environment. The problem is that if you take it out and don't have room in the TFSA, then yeah, you've taken it out at a lower rate, but now what do you do with it? You're going to invest it in a non-registered portfolio. You're going to pay full tax on that income, depending on the type of income.
Yep. Never easy to figure things out right off the cuff. You definitely need advice and strategy. So speak to your tax professional. And thank you once again for joining us, Jamie Golombek.
My pleasure. Happy New Year.
We've been joined by Jamie Golombek, Managing Director of Tax and Estate Planning at CIBC. Now, we are going to be talking about tax and strategy at our upcoming seminar on Tuesday, January 23rd, 7 p.m. at the Country Hills Golf Club. You do need to register, so go to morethanmoneyradio.com.
2023 was a pretty good investment year, but there's some stuff to worry about in 2024. Join us after the break for that discussion. You're on QR Calgary and More Than Money.